Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, honey.
Wow, pull that off.
Good afternoon. It's 2011. It is the first Tuesday of the new year. If it's Tuesday, and the phone's ringing. So this has just been the type of day that I've had all day. This is the Russell Hanger for Actual Shelly's Backroom, in the heart of the town. And with us, as always, every Tuesday is our usual roundtable of political pundits. We have joining us from the great state of Washington by way of Capitol Hill. He is the term member of Washington 2nd District. He is the Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Al Smith. Al, happy New Year to you, friend.
Happy
New Year. Well, that's pretty nice of you.
I would like to point out that we think we have our technical problem solved so that we don't drop out in the middle of the program.
We think we
now,
do.
Now if we can just get the program started on time, we'll be
one thing at a time.
Yeah.
One thing at a time, Congressman.
Baby steps, Al. With us, as always, as he is every Tuesday, is the former floor director for the Right Honorable Gerald R. Ford, Congressman from the great state of Michigan. He is also the former Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Broadcasting Corporation. He is the Honorable Bob Hines. Bob, Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Well, Happy New Year to you.
How was your holiday?
Well, it was really very nice. We had some family visit us. We had some good friends visit us. And everybody got out alive and well.
Well, that's good. That's good. Joining us remotely again is our resident international affairs pundit. He is our Howley, our Islander, if you will. He is the vice president of the Eurasia Center, and he is the Honorable Dr. Ralph Winnie. Ralph, how
Aloha,
you doing?
Aloha, everybody. Aloha, everybody. I'm doing well.
Hey, when are you coming back, bro?
I'll be back in another week or so.
Okay. You know what? You might just stay out there. You might as well. You're not missing much here. Actually, you're missing a lot. You're missing a lot here.
Starting tomorrow.
That's right. We're going to talk about that. With us always, former law enforcement, also former radio talk show personality himself, self-proclaimed conservative addict. He is Frank the Bodyguard. Frank, Happy New Year to you.
Harumph.
Welcome back.
Harumph.
How have you been?
Harumph indeed.
And joining us today is the always venerable, the always beautiful, the always entertaining, Chandler Romelli. Chandler, Happy New Year to you, dear.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. That's very kind.
You said her name right.
I did. I've made a New Year's resolution that I will not screw up the introductions again, and I will break that resolution by the first hour.
By the 1st of February.
Yeah. It has been, there's so much that's been going on. I mean, our last show was December 23rd. December 21st, and it was those are the introductions. That was just a flub on facts. That I will constantly do. What we've had is a huge, how do you want to put it? Upheaval. Well, I wouldn't call it an upheaval. I would call it more of a transition period, if you will, into the next coming of the House of Representatives. It hasn't exactly been smooth. It hasn't exactly been easy on either side of the house.
They're all showing up for summer camp, and they're trying to find out where they go, what they do, what they're supposed to do. Al made a comment earlier about something that he had done, and you have to do things in a timely manner, correct, Bob?
Well,
Al?
Yeah, but what I was really saying is that's for the freshmen, and there are a lot of them.
Right.
But there's a lot of guidance.
Well, the elder members of House
help the young ones.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Well, you know, this brings up a good point. I got to tell you something. You've got what's the total number now coming in, freshmen?
90
of them.
Over 90.
How many of them are Republicans?
82.
82 Republicans.
30 of those are
82
part.
Republicans and 9 Democrats are the new House.
Are the new House
30-something
freshman class.
Class.
Don't know that number.
Okay.
But what I will tell you is that you've got Speaker Boehner talking about austerity. You've got Speaker... You've got the new majority leader Eric Cantor, who is talking austerity, and then you have this is absolutely awesome. Freshman incoming Congressman Jeff Denham from the great state of California throwing a party at the W tonight, which I did not get my invitation. I don't know if you got your invitation.
I didn't get invited to that. No.
For $2,500. You get to sit and have dinner with the incoming Republican freshman class. You get to have a private concert by the always talented and beautiful Leanne Rimes. And you get to just spread love and joy and harmony and fellowship with the freshman Republican class that is promoting austerity.
$2,500. Why am I getting a cynical slant from this?
There's a huge cynical slant in this. Al, do I even have to go into this? Why?
No.
Well, does this not strike you as being not only bizarre, but just a bad message coming out of the gate?
Clearly on the message level, it is bad. But there's an underlying truth to it. The reformers often want to start by reforming the results of something that needs reform. But you can't reform the results.
Right.
Like austerity, until you reform how much money everybody has to raise in order to get reelected. What are these guys supposed to do? Charge $10 a ticket and then try and run a campaign on that? So they haven't addressed, and this is not a criticism, they haven't got a chance, but they haven't addressed, and Congress has not addressed in earlier years, the incredible amounts of money that have to be raised, and until that is fixed, you can't fix the kind of party that they're having.
What about Bonner's comment that he has already implemented or started things in, cutting budgets, cutting spending from the get-go?
Well, let's hold off on that because I still want to talk about what kind of message this party sends. This party is not exactly sending the right message to a lot of people in the party. Chandler.
Well, I really have a feeling that throwing that kind of party, one, I believe is just hubris. Two, it smacks of when Obama said complete transparency, and then we had no transparency. If you were going to run on the auspices that you were going to change things, and then you get into here, and before the clock ticks midnight, you're up to the same old tricks, well, I really, somebody's bum needs to be spanked for this. This is ridiculous.
I agree with Chandler. I was not suggesting that there was anything appropriate about it. I'm just saying there's an underlying.
Ralph, what do you got?
Yeah.
You were saying something?
I think it sends the wrong message, and it gives the Democrats an issue that they didn't really have at the very beginning. After John Boehner says they're going to do across-the-board cuts to ensure fiscal accountability, and having this kind of event is just creates an atmosphere of hypocrisy to a certain extent.
Well, I will tell you, you know, the one thing that I remember was when Nancy Pelosi first became Speaker, and Speaker Pelosi, outgoing Speaker Pelosi, had $1,000 a ticket fundraiser for the freshman class coming in, and that included arguably a lot better talent in Tony Bennett, but she was chastised by the Republicans for sending the wrong message that this is an inside the Beltway operation and you're not invited to the party. Is that the right message? I mean, are we being hypocritical in some instances?
Of course we're being hypocritical. The parties take turns being hypocritical. And it's one of the things I've heard so many reasons that the people voted the way they voted the last time. And I think the reason is that they saw the hypocrisy, they saw the quibbling, they saw nobody getting anything done, was a huge part of the resentment. And this is sending exactly the same signal. And as I just whispered over here, when someone said the Democrats can bitch about this, I said, yeah, until they hold their own big one in about 3 days, and
right.
That's the end of their chance to crow.
But I mean, the reality is that the desire to raise some funds to cancel campaign debts, to get a start on the next election, is almost overwhelming, particularly if you're a freshman, because the one thing you do know is it's going to be hard to get back. Next time may not be as easy as this time.
All right, but I will give incoming Speaker Boehner his due. He did not put his name to the invitation. He has not associated himself with this party at all, and has honorably just stepped back, saying, this is not what I'm trying to do. Now, what calls the question is, does Boehner need to rein in people like Eric Cantor and incoming Congressman Denham and saying, hey, kids, you either get in step or we're going to have a problem real quick?
I think you will see in the next month a number of initiatives from that come from the leadership, primarily Boehner, about the way we're going to be doing business in the future. Frank already indicated that Boehner has said that every office in the House of Representatives will take a 5% cut in their gross, you know, allotment, their money. That means the members' office, it means the committee's office, including the subcommittees, it means everything. And that's a very good line. We're not going to save tons of money there. I think, it might be $30 million. But it's a statement that we're going to be a little more sensible about our spending.
It's a start.
I agree totally with Bob. Here's my issue. If you were going to campaign on, and both sides of the aisle campaigned on fiscal responsibility, and then you're going to fly right in the face of that before you even get started, that becomes a huge problem. Now, Obama even said, it's time to stop campaigning. Well, wasn't that one of the big problems that Republicans had with Obama? Is it his first year, it seemed like, or his first 2 years, it seemed like he never stopped campaigning. Well, it's time for the Republicans to addy up and do exactly what, you know, they were complaining about Obama doing.
Well, let's say, Ralph, I got to ask a question. I mean, you know, This almost screams. If you're a PAC, if you're the head of a PAC, does this
right.
not call into question? Hey, this is a mess. You know, why are you coming at me firsthand?
Well, if you're the head of a PAC, obviously you want to raise money for your candidates, and this is why you're very supportive of having this kind of dinner to, as Bob said, to erase campaign debt. However, Republicans campaign on having a more transparent and accountable type of government to cut back on these type of events that are perceived as insider politics inside the Beltway. And to have this kind of event so quickly after you take control really appears to be very hypocritical, especially when the Republicans lambasted Nancy Pelosi for her fundraising event as she was leaving her speakership.
But don't you think that the Democrats would lash out regardless, just because both sides have their agenda? And what better way to start off by picking on the incoming class to say, see what they've done? They're talking about this when they've done the same thing. So I mean, like the famous football quote: "Act like you've been in the end zone before when you get there." Is that
this freshman class is wrong? They are wrong to do it. If they campaign on fiscal responsibility, this flies in the face of it, and they're just flat out wrong. And I hope that Boehner reins them in.
This is a three-term limit. People running for a fourth term.
Yeah. It would have been nice, and it would have been, I think, wise if the freshman class, if they wanted to hold such an event, and I think I'm not surprised that they do. They would have waited, let's say, a few months. Let's say March. Let's give them a chance to get organized.
Bob, I agree with that. And the Republicans have an annual dinner that they have every March,
yes,
where
they
could
exactly.
have easily incorporated.
Exactly.
So the timing is bad, but
the timing is bad, but the reality is you're going to raise money if you're a campaign.
Oh, Al, go ahead.
What would have been smart would have been for the freshman class to do a come meet the freshman class, the ones that are going to be fiscally conservative and serve hot dogs,
right,
and Coke. Pork and beans, and hold it in the least expensive place that people can get to.
And raise money that way. I got to tell you something. I got to ask this question. Al, as a former member of Congress,
yeah.
would you put your name to something like this early?
No.
Bob, would you have recommended to your member that he back away from this, or do you not see a problem?
I think it's a mistake to do it this quickly. I think March would have been a better time to do a major campaign. If you want to do a meet the member, I think Al has a very good idea.
It would have been brilliant.
Get a big hall, charge $100, just enough to cover the cost of the rental and the hot dogs and the coats and the beer, and do it that way.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of more sense. I would and I'd also point out that Mr. Boehner, before he was the minority leader, every year had a fundraiser that he called it. And it was really just to get together and visit. He held it up at a fire station, I think, or someplace up on Capitol Hill. It cost $100, and he invited all kinds of folks there. And it was just a matter of getting to know some people who were there, some of the younger members, and it was a hell of a good idea. But something like that would have been a very nice idea for the freshmen to do, as Al says. They can raise their money a few months later.
Well, this is, this Congress has done it. I got to give credit to Congress for doing it. He's eager to jump in head first. And God knows he's bringing a lot of initiative to this. He has already started a leadership pack. The man has not been sworn in and has started a leadership pack. I kid you not. He has started a leadership pack called America's New Majority. And apparently it is America's New Majority that is holding this party. By the way, for the record, incoming majority leader Cantor will be in attendance tonight. Apparently, a fan of Leanne Rimes. I don't get it.
Well, I'm just throwing a little prediction here. This will be not the first time, I suspect, as we go through this Congress, that we will see Mr. Cantor and Mr. Boehner going opposite directions.
Well, that's going to lead us into the next segment here. We're going to take a quick break. I need a cigar. I haven't even had a cigar yet. I came literally running in there, for the six or seven people that are out there. Actually, I got to tell you something. Our last show's response broke a record. We had over 110 listeners. So we're increasing listenership. So for the 110 of you that might be out there or might be listening to us at some point, stay with us.
We started in a little 5,000 watt radio station in San Diego.
Oh, here we go. Ralph, stay with us. We're going to throw you on mute for a second. When we come back, I want to talk about this because this is going to lead into a new subject. Is who is controlling the Republican Party right now? Apparently, nobody is, and it's going to lead into this huge discussion because. This is a prime example, and this is just going to lead in. It's a great segue.
There's a chicken coop out there.
I don't know what it is. I do not know what it is. But what I will tell you is it is amazing. So stay with us. When we come back, I'll also get the calling number to the 150 people that are listening. You can join the conversation here at Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us. Again from Shelley's back room, 1331 F Street, and bless you, Chandler. That's all right. Unfortunately, we don't have the technology to. We have no dump button yet, so we'll work on that. That's all right. It is the first Tuesday of the month. It is our first show of 2011. We are live on the air. This is Backroom Politics with myself, JT Russell, Al Swift, Bob Hines, Frank the Bodyguard, Chandler Romelli is with us today. And from the great state of Hawaii, still sun and fun all the way around, our resident Hallie, Dr. Ralph Winnie. Ralph, you still with us?
Yes. Glad to be with everybody.
I hope you're comfortable.
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
Could I point out something?
Yes.
Our last live program, we had to close 10 minutes early.
Because of the Christmas parties.
This one we started 10 minutes late, for I don't know why, but there is not a soul in this bar today.
Which is great for us.
Yes. Right.
Those people who are listening can actually hear us.
That's true.
So call in.
Yeah, so call in. And for the 7 or 8 that have stayed with us through the break, our call-in number is 619-638-8477. 619-638-8477. You can join us here live on Backroom Politics.
Join the 100.
Be a part of the circle of 100.
Yeah.
The legionnaires of Backroom Politics and the First Congress Society. We were talking before the break about this fantastic party that's going on literally across the street from Shelley's back room. And this is just absolutely, I mean, it's an A-list party, and we were not invited. I'm shocked by this. Chandler, I would have expected somebody of your caliber in the social scenes here in D.C. that you would have gotten at least an invitation to this. You did not. I'm shocked by this.
I did not, but I find it very Marie Antoinette, so.
I must say I did get the email to pay $2,500 if I wanted to attend.
How come you didn't fly back immediately on the first flight from Hano?
I coun't do that.
Didn't.
Yeah. Did you hear, Bob?
I have too much work to do here.
We would all rather be out there.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Leanne Rimes, who I think is beautiful. Leanne Rimes or Honolulu, well, I'd stay in Honolulu.
Yeah.
I would do that.
I'd stay in Honolulu.
Well, I got to tell you something. But this brings up a critical question. You've got Eric Cantor that's got his name attached to it. You have the incoming Speaker of the House and Speaker Boehner not attaching himself, but literally backing away as quickly as possible without tripping. Who's running the party? Who's running the party here? Al, let me ask you that question from a Democratic. As a Democrat, you got to see and love this. You got to be frothing at the mouth.
Well, I think the Republicans have simply viewed the Democratic Party over the years and are going to try it our way. Nobody runs the Democratic
Party. Wow. You know what? I've got to tell you something, Al. That is like Occam's razor. Occam's razor. All things being considered, the easiest answer is usually the right answer.
Yeah.
So, who do you think is the voice of the party right now as we see it?
I think you have no voice of the party. You've got, I think, a voice of the Senate in Mitch McConnell. I think Boehner is edging out others as the spokesman for the Republicans in the House. You better keep a very sharp eye on Eric Cantor, who has a lean and hungry look. I think you have something going on at the Republican National Committee. We don't know where that's going.
Well, that's
going
to be our next topic here coming up, but go ahead.
Whoever wins that will have some control. And how this all comes together is going to take some time. I do not suspect that Republicans will fall into having a great civil war. But I think we have not got them. But things aren't lined up yet.
Not cohesive yet. But,
yeah, it's not cohesive, and they're not able to put it together yet. They'll put it together.
Bob, we're self-proclaimed Republicans. Who's leading our party?
I would say right now that there are two groups that you're talking about. In the legislative world, I think Al is exactly right. I think it's Mitch McConnell in the Senate, and I think it's John Boehner in the House, and I don't think that there's any chance of him not being the final determiner in the House. With respect to beyond that, the National Committee, you know, the major job they're supposed to do is raise money so they can distribute the money. And no matter who's the chairman, they'll do that to the best of their ability. The real question long term is who are the leading candidates to be the spokesperson, i.e. the candidate in 2012. And I think that is so open that there is no one who you can say has a 25% chance to be the nominee right now.
Al, go ahead.
And we've overlooked the governors. There's a lot of new Republican governors, and if they chose to get themselves together, they could be a powerful influence in Washington.
We should remind ourselves that 12 years ago, George W. Bush was the governor of Texas. And I don't think anybody in the country outside of Texas knew him and knew anything at all about him. The governor, Republican governors, were the catalysts for moving him forward as they controlled, you know, governors tend to control their delegations from the states that go to the convention.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, now you've got the Democratic Governors Association. You have the RGA, the Republican Governors Association.
We have more Republicans now than we've ever had in the governorship.
Does the RGA today have more power than they've seen in a long, long time?
I would think that they probably do if they're smart enough not to wave it around to public. I think if they're smart, they will spend their time taking a good hard look at their own plans. Every state in this country, except one or two, has a constitutional requirement to balance their budget. The first problem they've got is to balance their budget. The second thing they've got, once they get past that, and that's true for both parties, the Republican governors sit in states which those states have more than enough delegates, more than enough electoral votes to win the presidency in 2012.
Right. With this power gains responsibility. The Republicans have to quit worrying about the media yelling at Obama for the transparency issue and all the other stuff that went on. They have the power in there now. Now they need to put the money where the mouth is, actually do some change. And be transparent. I don't know if you're going to... Okay, I'm getting the stinky eye from Al. Go ahead, Al.
Well, everything you say is right as long as you forget the president and the Senate.
Okay, with the power that Boehner has, does he have the power... I'll get a consensus at the table. Does he have the power to come in and go, hey, guys, look, you have good intentions. You're starting off on the wrong foot. Does he have that power to reel them in and say...
I worry about Boehner and his power.
That's the question.
Go ahead.
That's the question, because Dana and Cancer do not like each other, neither trust the other, and then while Boehner is the incoming speaker, there's no question that Cantor wants that job and is going to wait for Boehner to slip up and then make his move. The key is going to be the loyalty among the Tea Party Republicans that were elected. Who are they going to support? Are they going to support Boehner just because he's speaker, or are they going to gravitate to Cantor? And both, you're going to see both Boehner and Cantor really jockeying for support among the Tea Party freshman Republican class.
Look who's attending the freshman's party.
Right.
It's Cantor.
Absolutely.
Right. Bob.
Let me remind everybody that during the campaign, as the Tea Party candidates began to win the primaries, Mr. Boehner's staff was making sure that as soon as a candidate won, Tea Party or not, but all the Tea Party people were included. His people called immediately to see what help they, meaning Mr. Boehner, could give, whether it be dollars or whether it be visits. And Mr. Boehner, I know personally, probably got more mileage than he could use if he lived to be 150 on his airline card, because he has been in some districts in the House, probably somewhere close to 75, I believe, maybe 80, and he has been out there for them. He is also, as the speaker, incumbent coming in, he has also made sure that a number of the Tea Party people, and he's looked at all the best, he's found the best of the best, and he has made sure that in the leadership, in major committee assignments, and other ways, he has said, you guys are with us, let's join together. And it's going to be, obviously there will be some times when the Tea Party people will have an urge to go one way or another, but the fact of the matter is, I think that Mr. Boehner is going to have less difficulty with the Tea Party folks than some people believe, because he has already reached out to them when they needed him most, because he went to their district and he raised money for them and he provided them with money.
Al,
he's helped.
I think Bob makes a very good point, but it's kind of interesting to me that there's a parallel between the two parties. Nancy Pelosi and the number two person, oh my God, Cindy Hoyer,
yeah,
also don't like each other. Jenny was from Omaha, but was a lower person, so they have differences. Question answer. Right, it shot Bob Michael's feet off at every chance.
Please feel free to call in. 619-638-8477 is the number to join us here at Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Backroom. Chandler, from the state level, you've been around politics here in the Commonwealth of Virginia for a long time. You know, we're talking about the power of some of the Republican governors. Bob Dodd has been somebody that's been mentioned as an up-and-comer. His art is on the rise. Does Bob McDonnell truly have, in your opinion, the or the power to rise again?
First of all, we have a one-term government in Virginia. Never a freshman in the Virginia. I need to see where all this is going. I very confident, and what he's done with the budget, he's done great things in the Commonwealth, but I need to see more of the pack. I need to see what's going on.
Ralph, what are you hearing as far as who's the voice of our party right now?
Well, I don't think we have a voice. There are people that are trying to angle to be that voice, whether it's Boehner, Cantor, Mitch McConnell, or even a Michael Steele if he wins his re-election. We don't have a Reagan-type type of candidate, and that's what's going to have to come forth in the next year or so in order to be effective against Obama. We need a very clear, concise message. We had that in the elections, but we still don't have a definite leader that's going to take us through the next year or two. So we just have to stay tuned.
Nobody's emerged.
Well, I got to tell you something. As a Republican, that bothers me. That bothers me. You know, you've got as arguably he is. Make no mistake about it. Governor Kane is there. And you recognize that now.
Yeah.
That Governor Kane has done a great job of filling that position.
February, correct. We'll have a spokesman from the standpoint of the National Party, but that's not necessarily the National Party structure in both in you know, Tim Kaine is not trying to be more than the national chair. His job is to raise money. Whoever the Republicans choose, their major job is going to be not so much as a spokesman, but as someone to raise money for the variety of Republican campaigns that need money.
But in the long
term, the spokesperson of the party are going to be legislators, number one, for the early part of the next 2 years. But as we get to the end of this year and moving to next year, it's going to be the major candidates who are seeking the nomination. And that is yet to be decided. Nobody yet has said, I'm running for president in the Republican nomination effort.
All right, but let me ask this question. Al, you know, Bob brings up a point that, you know, the committees, the political committees, are just basically fundraisers. That being the case, you know, with money comes voice. Does that not say that the voice of the party should be at this stage? I mean, we are coming into 2011. That usually starts crazy season in presidential politics. So we're going to start seeing people start running into Iowa, New Hampshire, and those arenas. Al, does in fact the committees have a stronger position now than they may have like 20 years ago, 30 years ago?
Certainly not 40 years ago. Tim Kaine came just after former governor of Vermont. Name I can't remember. He was not without power, but he wasn't in harness with other Republicans, which became certainly better off than we were then. I'm a Democrat.
And I would like to stay on the record. He's been a Democrat for a long time. I haven't known him when he wasn't a Democrat. I don't think I ever know him when he isn't a Democrat.
That's true. We should know that this is a nonpartisan organization, a nonpartisan roundtable. For you Democrats that are out there that would like to back up Congressman Swift, please feel free to call in and carry the flag with Congressman Al at 619-638-8477. Frank, you got a point.
Question for the table. Is the problems and dilemma with the RNC was Steele, aren't there three or four people up for election?
Well, we're going to talk about that in a second. That's going to segue us into the next issue is with the – Bob, you had brought up the election in February. Right now there are six stated candidates for chair of the RNC.
Right. And, Justin, my understanding was that Michael Steele acquitted himself fairly well in the debate.
He does. There's no question that Michael Steele is very articulate. He's very good at talking on his feet. You know, he's had some major gaps. He's had some major issues. But arguably, Michael Steele can be or has the potential to be a really solid voice if he can get out of his own way. He just can't get out of his own way, unfortunately. Now, the question comes back is, we've got six different candidates. We've got six different divisive, if you want to call them, sectors in the RNC right now. You've got people, I mean, inside the Beltway, people are backing, and I can't remember her name, a former Bush advisor under 43.
Is that Maria Cino?
Yes. Yeah, Miss Cino.
Marcia?
Yes. She's got the backing of a lot of the inside the Beltway types.
She does.
But it's the outside the Beltway types that are starting to flex their muscle, your, for lack of a better term, your Tea Partiers that are out there. They're starting to flex their muscle, and they've got their own ideas of who should be up there. Chandler, what do you think?
I talked to an RNC person yesterday that will remain nameless,
mm-hmm.
and basically he's quaking in his boots, and he says he's heard some very disturbing things, and in the next couple of weeks there will be some huge upheaval going on in the RNC. I don't know what that means. It was a very cryptic message that I received, but, you know, like.
Well, I got to tell you something. I mean, you know, this is almost, Al, you've seen the movie The Candidate with Robert Redford. You know, the famous scene at the end is, you know, his advisors come in and tell him, you know, you've just been elected president, and the closing frame is him looking up at everybody and saying, okay, now what? It's almost like the Republican Party is the candidate in the movie, and they're looking around going, okay, we got the House back. Okay, now what? How do you fix this?
She says hopefully quickly, and she's right. I think it really depends on how well Boehner does. So much rests on Boehner. And Boehner's a very good man. He's smart.
Agreed.
He knows how to compromise when the time to compromise is right. But he has got a group behind him in his caucus or in his conference. That are likely to want to all be leaders, and I think it's going to be a huge job. And if anybody can do it, it's Boehner. But I wouldn't want to bet a lot of money that he can pull it off.
Bob, let me ask you this question before you make your point. Is, you know, Al points out a really good he made a really good remark, is saying that everything focuses on Boehner. Are we putting too much pressure on John Boehner at this stage? I mean, the man hasn't even been sworn in as Speaker, and literally he's carrying the cross, for lack of a better term, of the entire party going into a major presidential election cycle. Is that fair to Speaker Boehner?
Sure. He did, you know, he it's his job. He's going to do a good job.
Well, and we or anybody didn't put it on him. Circumstances put him in that position.
Just, you know, we were talking earlier about Eric Cantor and John Boehner. Just, you know, they are not in conflict. The two of them are not, you know, fighting for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. They are together, and I think that we should understand that. I mean, I don't think they're not going to go. They're not going to go throw an anniversary party for each other. But the fact of the matter is that they're working together. It is in their interest to work together.
I'm glad we're recording this show. I may want to play portions of it back.
Now, the big question is: if the Democrats make Boehner a target, like the Republicans did against Nancy Pelosi, how will Boehner respond? Will there be people in Boehner's caucus that will try and boot him out of power?
Well, I don't think that Mr. Boehner has anything to worry about at all at the present time, at all. I think the Republicans in the House realize that they have a responsibility, and I think that the Speaker is setting it up very, very well. We are going to see, we've already talked about the fact, I think, that he is cutting the budgets of every committee and every member's office. Doesn't raise a lot of money, but it sends a message.
Well, you know,
number two, I think you're going to see over the next month to month and a half, probably every week, some single shot piece of legislation that is going to try to save some money in some way. And I think you're going to see it regularly, and I don't know how many of them will pass the Senate, but the House is going to be saying to the country, we've heard you. We know that you want us to cut the budget. We want to be more conservative in our money spending. And I think that we will see people rally to that point. Certainly, there is nobody in the Republican Party in the House who doesn't believe in that. And I think Boehner is very smart to start that way. So we're going to have constantly, every week, we're going to have another bill that needs to be passed, that they want to pass, which they will pass in the House, which will save some money. And the Senate will be asked to decide what they're going to do about it.
Well, you brought up the point of them cutting some of the budgets, and I bring this up to Al as a former member of Congress. Speaker's office announced today that they're cutting $35 million out of the total House budget. Does the House actually have $35 million that they can cut? Or, I mean, are we not getting new equipment in the House gym? Are we not getting Are we not getting split pea soup in the House dining room anymore? I mean, what are we looking at here, Al?
I don't know what they're looking at. It seems to me that one place that I would think that Congress could cut with great benefit to the whole country is to reduce the number of trips that people take home.
Yeah.
That seems contrary to the idea that we're closer to people. But the fact is, with modern communication, congressmen today are closer to their districts than they have ever been before without going home. Of course they have to go home, but I don't know that it's very good for legislation for them to take off out of here on Thursday, come back on Tuesday.
Brian, do you see this newfound power that the Republican Party will have as a way to get things put up into the floor, have it voted on, and then have the Democratic Party, their way of saying, well, this is our payback for you kicking our butts in the election? Is this going to be like a tinkle contest where the Republicans will start showing up as the party of no?
I
would hope they would not be the party of no. I would hope they would be the party of alternatives.
Compromise.
Something that he and I have thought about for a great deal of time. And it's the way the members, of, particularly in the House, they probably be able to find ways to solve some of the problems rather than just fight over them. If they knew each other better, they would be staying here. If they stayed here more, they'd know each other better. If they'd spend more time in Washington, you know, spending time with each other, they would know each other better, they would trust each other more, and we might be able to find more reasonable compromises.
Hold that thought, Bob, because I want to bring that up after the top of the hour. We're coming down at the bottom of the hour, top of the hour, the 5 o'clock hour right now here on the East Coast. One last thing on the current House and the incoming House of the 114th Congress is Speaker Boehner. It was announced today that Speaker Boehner is having the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court swear in his entire staff. What happened to separation of powers? Does that send a good message, or are we reading too much into this? Is this a red herring?
I think it's a red herring. I think what he's trying to do is say, we are going to try to be straightforward and as clean as we can be, and we're bringing the judiciary in to keep them take a look at it.
Al, have you ever seen where a chief justice has sworn in a speaker's entire staff before?
No.
It's precedent. Is that the right thing? Is that the right message?
It's showmanship.
It is showmanship. It is posture. But the fact of the matter is, a good bit of successful politics.
Right. But you know, the Chief Justice and Obama don't see eye to eye, and Reagan and Boehner is well aware of that.
Well, you know, we've said this is strictly showmanship. You know, we've seen showmanship in, you know, having Speaker Boehner saying to read the Constitution on the first day of the session. That's obviously showmanship. We were just discussing that before we went on the air real quick. Another amount of showmanship is the celebration, the number of Republicans who are showing support and rallying around the 100th anniversary of the birth of Ronald Reagan. A lot of legislation, a lot of people rallying behind the century. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but there is a little bit of showmanship in that.
I'm a Reaganite.
Wow. That's a great statement to close out the hour, Chandler. Well played. Well played, madam. We are coming up on the 5 o'clock hour here on the East Coast, the 2 o'clock hour out there on the West Coast. And I don't even know what time island time it is out there, Ralph. What time is it out there? 8 hours. What time?
Noon.
Oh, God, you're killing me. We're going to take a break here for the top of the hour. We will be back. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us. Joining us, as we do every Tuesday, is our usual distinguished panel of experts. Joining us, as always, is former eight-term member of Congress, Emmy Award-winning broadcaster, Al Swift. Al.
Hi.
Is here. He is the former floor director for Gerald Ford, former president of the Federal Reserve Board,
is the Honorable Bob Hines. Bob, welcome back. And
glad to be here.
Joining us in Hawaii is our international affairs expert, our pundit, and our resident Howley. He is Dr. Ralph Winnie out in Hawaii. Ralph, you still with us, I hope?
Aloha, everybody. Glad to be here.
Aloha. Joining us also today is the lovely and talented Chandler Ramelli, host of Chandler and Rhea, also on Internet Radio. Chandler, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And sitting back down here at the table here at Chili's Back Room is our self-proclaimed blue-collar resident of Florida by way of Ohio, former radio talent, Frank the Bodyguard.
Hello.
Frank,
which
welcome
I
back.
Have a show on Saturday night from 6 to 7 on Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, you should probably protest it.
Than I had. I was not the legislative director for
Florida.
Oh, and
I said
floor director.
I
was not. I was his counsel. I was
one of these days I'm just going to make you president.
I know.
That's going to be a running gag on the show is what new titles I can give you throughout the introduction.
Listen, I have a lot of friends out there, and if they're listening, they're saying, is he puffing himself up or not? And I'm not. I was emperor one time, but I gave that up, too.
One of these days I want Gail to come in and have Gail come in and give us exactly how it went.
She will knock me down so hard.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what? I'm going to puff you and Al up tremendously because this is a topic that we have talked about many times around the table here. For years, we have talked about the issue of the illustrious filibuster. The Senate rule of that Congressman Al and Bob have had here at this table just pretty much trashing the idea and the concept of the rule of the filibuster.
Al, have you ever done a filibuster? Have you ever filibustered it?
The Senate.
Have you ever
missed it? But the question is, if you had been one, would you?
No. But I will tell you right now that there is a new push to make the rule of the filibuster in antiquity.
Well, not in antiquity, but they're going to tighten the rules.
Tighten the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us a little bit of what is your understanding of what the new initiative on the filibuster is?
Well, I'm not sure because there are several proposals out there. All of them initiated by the younger Democrats. And I congratulate them on it because the filibuster is not if the majority just party it is, just says we're going to filibuster, it immediately slows down the ability of the Senate to do anything at all. And it seems to me that it's very good that as we get ready to debate and to swear new members in the Senate and the House, and both houses have to adopt their rules, that the Senate is going to debate how they can amend the filibuster rule to make it more difficult for one person just to say, I don't like this and I'm against it. That's operating. There's not even a discussion about it. And I think it would be well if the Senate were to move toward a rule that would provide that there has to be at least a reasonable number of people who wish to debate something continuously for a while to force people to stand up and talk about it rather than just say, I'm going to fall instead of majority leader. I give up.
Al?
The history of this is interesting. And I got to tell you a little story. First.
Go ahead.
A bunch of us, I don't know why. Hello?
Was
one of those many. And we were on where we had a car talking. And Ted Stevens, the great senator in the state of Alaska, having an extremely short fuse, and I felt the conversation was getting a little dull, and so I said, well, I think what we should do is eliminate the filibuster. And Senator Stevens went clear through the ceiling. We watched him run. It took him 5 minutes to come back down, and he was still waving his arms. The pitch is for older members of the Senate filibuster is part of the institution, and they just are absolutely opposed to it. The majority needs, in some fashion, ultimately, to be able to work its will. That's what democracy is about, majority rule. What the filibuster does is prevent, in the name originally of protecting the rights of the minority, which is a worthy cause, but it's been carried so far that now it's not protecting the rights of the minority, it is handing the majority over to the minority, in effect, at least in the sense of the negative qualities they have. And I think that they must, if they want to be able to show their face seriously in public, at least make the rules so that in some fashion you get to where the majority can vote.
Yeah, Chandler.
I just wanted to clarify, I think what you're saying ultimately is, if a rule has been around long enough, you find loopholes enough that you can bastardize anything, and that the filibuster, this is not James Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington any longer. It's sort of been hijacked, and we need to either clarify, go back to the old, or put some sort of limits on this.
Well, you know, it's funny you say...
That's exactly what I'm saying.
You know, it's funny you say that, Chandler, because, you know, the funny thing about it is, you know, Harry Reid, the minority leader in the Senate... the majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid has been saying that the Republicans have been abusing the filibuster, yet when confronted with the option of tightening the rules on the filibuster, now Harry Reid says, oh, no, I know, I want to keep this. It almost seems like there's a certain hypocrisy coming out of the other side of the Capitol.
Go figure.
Seems like hypocrisy? I wouldn't say hypocrisy. I would say insanity.
Really? You go so far as to call it insanity?
It is crazy. Senators have, individually, have so much more power than an individual House member has within their institution. And they can put holes. One senator can put a hold on a bill anonymously and can prevent that from moving ahead. Now, what you're doing is you're asking these people to voluntarily give up their individual power to bring the Senate to a halt. And they don't want to give it up. I don't see how they could publicly, without watching, defend that. And you rarely hear anybody defending it. They keep it and they use it, but they don't defend it.
And this is a particularly good time for there to be some modification of the rule, because with only 53 Democrats and a number of them nervous about the next election, given the past election, and having so many members running next time as opposed to the Republican, I think it's 24 senators on the Democratic side and 10 or 11 on the Republican side. This is and the close number, 53-47, which means that this is a particularly good time to try to fix the rule, because it's a relatively close Senate anyway, and you don't really need just one person to stop something. Because given the nervousness of some of the Democrats, legitimately so, and the Republican being a relatively close minority to the majority, it seems to me this is a perfectly good time to do something to fix the rule, to make it more reasonable, so in the future, no matter who's in charge, the majority does have the ability to move forward.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is, you know, one of the comments that was made by Senator Tom Udall out of New Mexico was that his quote is that the Constitution gives the Senate the ability to set the rules, and that on the first legislative day, such changes can be made by a simple majority of 51 senators.
Key number.
Right. 51, the majority. Since the rules change typically require support from 2/3, Harry Reid is now facing new pressure to simply extend the first legislative day, basically covering a filibuster.
Yeah.
Filibustering on the rules of the filibuster. So I got to tell you, where's the logic in this? Al, this is a Democratic issue.
We divided by zero.
Al was right. These guys have a lot of authority, a lot of power, and it's hard to give it up.
They don't want to give it up.
It's hard.
I'm still reminded of the Washington State House member, legislature, who said to me once, Al, he said, you must remember that the Republicans are merely the opposition. The enemy is the Senate. And you look at the last session, and clearly, if you were worried about not getting anything done, the enemy was the Senate.
Right.
And specifically the filibuster.
Right. The purpose of this program...
What level
bring...
of public support for getting rid of, for changing the filibuster?
What was that, Ralph? I'm sorry.
What is the level of support among the American people for changing the rules of the filibuster, and will that bear any pressure on the senators that don't want to give up their authority and power?
I don't think the lay people don't have the knowledge of the ramifications of it.
I think that's a dicey question.
No, I agree.
Double-edged sword.
I agree. I got to tell you, Ralph. You know, in the experience I've had, I mean, the filibuster is something that is inherent only to the Senate. Even state legislatures don't have a filibuster rule. This is strictly a U.S. Senate thing. Now, the one thing I agree, it's a dicey question. I don't think, and I agree with everybody's comment, is there's nobody outside the Beltway, or even a majority of the people inside the Beltway, are truly familiar of what is the filibuster and what does it go with. Frank,
if Reed gets his way, or appears to get his way, what are the ramifications? What would that change?
It would change nothing. We would go on as we have, only worse.
Worse in what way, though? I'm sorry.
Not worse in that it would be even harder to break a filibuster.
I just want to make a comment for what Ralph said. Outside of the Beltway, if you ask the layman American what to explain the electoral, and we get the percentage of that, I think you've got your answer for how many of them understand what a filibuster is outside of Washington. James Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I don't think that there's a concept, and I don't think necessarily that they're on a need to know.
If you coming from a layman's, non-diplomatic, or excuse me, not legislative, if you Google filibuster, does it tell you every in, out, or is this something like there are unwritten rules on the floor that you can do this, but you can't do that, and then if someone challenges it, they pull out the book and go.
It's been romanticized by West Wing and everything
else. Okay.
Al, go ahead and comment on that.
Well, I was just going to say that I'm sure you could Google it. Bob has just, Bob and I got a hold of a document written by the Library of Congress that lays out the history of the filibuster and when it was changed and how it was changed. And it's not the most exciting reading in the world, and sometimes it's very hard to understand. But the fact is, you used to, in the past, and I can remember this as a youngster, you actually had to hold the floor.
Yes.
You couldn't just say, I'm going to filibuster. You had to filibuster. That's what James Stewart was
doing.
Right,
that's what everybody thinks. That's what I think
about.
It's romanticized.
Well, let me ask this question to our friends. Our resident legislators is there's a rule inside the filibuster rule called the secret hold. What is the secret hold?
Uh-oh.
It means that a single senator can hold up a nomination or a piece of legislation just by saying, you know, I oppose this, and you can stop it. And that's a right of a senator.
That's dangerous.
Does he have to be like the old Jane? You know?
No, you don't. It is not something that has to be publicized.
In other words, he doesn't have to be recognized by the chair. He can just
blurt
it out.
He just lets the leadership on both sides know that he or she is absolutely opposed to this particular thing going forward.
And
now,
you can do it anonymously.
The matter, Ralph?
Wait, hold on. Ralph, what was your question?
I said, is there a level of corruption in that?
Well, sure there is. I mean, you know, it's about as untransparent as you can get. You have one person, for whatever reason that they believe is legitimate, and it's usually something to do with something back home, and they want something from back home that's not working, and they want it to happen, and the way to get the Senate to pay attention to what they want to do about an issue back home is to stop a piece of legislation or a nomination or several nominations.
So they throw an anonymous tantrum.
And they throw an anonymous tantrum.
So in order to get their way, they have to yield to whatever this guy wants.
And unless, yeah.
All right, now, the bottom line is that the United States Senate is the least small-d democratic institution on the face of the earth. The least democratic institution on the face of the earth. I know of no other truly democratic institution in which the minority can prevent the majority from working its will. That's wrong. That's just counter to everything.
I'll look it up, but is there a reading somewhere of when the first filibuster was ever used?
Well,
and
yeah,
was
four? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we're getting in the weeds on that one, but I will say that
Bob's
got to talk
right there.
All
right.
You know, here's the funny thing about it is, you've got Jeff Merkley from Oregon, you've got Claire McCaskill, and Senator McCaskill actually made a pretty solid interpretation in Politico today. Her quote was, and I quote, "I think people need to understand that no one is naive here, and that we have a very evenly divided Senate right now, and I don't think any of us think that it's beyond the possible that Democrats can make in the minority in a couple of years. That is why this effort is a pretty modest one to do away with the filibuster." So, I mean, how do you read that?
Well, it's not going to what is being proposed in no way removes the filibuster. It requires those who wish to filibuster to, in effect, do more than just mention to the minority leader and the majority leader that they're about to do it.
Show substance as to
you've got to stand up and you've got to do more than just say secretly, privately, in a conversation, I don't want to do this and I'm going to stop it.
Chandler.
So the six proposals that you were talking about, they're really more to rein in
the filibuster rules
rather than to get rid of the filibuster
altogether.
Right.
Right. That is
right.
Exactly right.
I think we can all agree that sounds like a pretty good idea.
Well, it is an improvement. I mean, but the two people here that are going to be on the hook for this are Chuck Schumer, who's going to be on the hook for this. He's chairman of the Rules Committee, I believe, and is leading the panel on this discussion. And on the Republican side, Harry Reid has been an open voice on this one. And I'm sorry, on the minority leader, Senator
Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell is going to be on the hook for this as well as getting the Republicans in line and either going forward with this. Now, Mitch McConnell, being old school, obviously is going to have some thoughts on his own about this. He's not necessarily, especially as a minority leader,
well,
he doesn't want this to go away anytime soon.
Listen, if you were the minority leader, you wouldn't want it to go away either, under normal circumstances. But you take a look at the future, and McCaskill says it very well. It's a relatively closely divided Senate. We have a lot of Democrats who have a little bit of a nervousness based upon the number that are running in some states that, four or five congressional districts go Republican from Democrat, and senators in those states who are running next two years from now are a little nervous, and they should be. The fact of the matter is, this is probably the best opportunity we have to make a filibuster rule that permits members to be very strongly opposed and slow things down, but you've got to have a point at some time when the majority has the ability to call for a final vote.
We're going to continue this in our next segment, but one of the things I want to put out there and that will lead us in the next segment is for Al and for Bob is, Al, the question to you is, in a utopia, if you were the rules chairman in the Senate, there's several options on how to curtail or restrain the filibuster. In your opinion, what is the only solution to make this effective and have the Senate stop being this elitist arena of politics?
There are probably several ways you could do that.
What's the most logical?
The most logical is you just abolish the damn thing. Just don't do it.
Which
will not happen.
Right.
And if I were in running the Rules Committee, I wouldn't try to do that. That's for sure a disaster. What I would try to do is to make it so that those who want to do a filibuster have to put time and and effort into doing it.
Similar to what Strom Thurmond did, and similar to what Strom Thurmond did on the floor when he was filibustering the Civil Rights Bill.
In those days, they actually brought cots into the Senate and in the walkway behind, and so that members of both parties who had to be there at all times under those rules, so that they could sleep. While somebody's droning on, they'd run it all night long. They'd run it for days. And if you wanted to do a filibuster, you could do it.
Yeah.
If you had the stamina and three or four people, eight, could get together and switch off. That's
yeah,
a word.
You can switch
and
off.
Under British dictionary?
Yeah.
And you can read anything.
Yeah.
You can read the phone book for that time. And so it required enormous effort to do it, but you could do it. And I think if you went back to that, you would reduce the number of nuisance filibusters that we see today.
All right. Well, we're coming up on a break. In fact, we're a little bit behind right now, but that seems to be the mantra for the day. We're going to take a break here for a couple of minutes. We will be back here live from Shelley's Back Room. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us.
Good session.
That's very good. Thank you.
we're back live from Shelley's Back Room, 1331 F Street here in our nation's capital. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room. With us, as always, every Tuesday from 4 to 6 Eastern Time is our usual roundtable. It is J.T. Russell, your host, Congressman Al Swift, the Honorable Bob Hines, Frank the Bodyguard, and joining us today is Chandler Ramelli. Folks, I wanted to bring up something that posted today. It was actually posted on Politico today. Apparently, Daryl Issa, the incoming chairman of I just had a moment there.
Mail moment.
Government ops. What's it called?
It's an investigative subcommittee.
Yes. Yes. The incoming chairman Daryl Issa of California. Apparently sent a letter prior to his installation as chairman to several trade organizations, basically asking these industries what does he need to fix and what does he need to investigate in the Obama administration. And I'm going to read a quote from a letter that he wrote to the National Association of Manufacturers back on December 8th. His quote was, "As a trade organization with members that must comply with the regulatory state, I ask for your assistance in identifying existing and proposed regulations that have negatively impacted job growth in your members' industry." And the industries that he sent this to include the National Petrochemical and Refiners Association, the National Association of Manufacturers. He sent one to the Association of American Railroads, and then he also sent letters to individual companies, including Duke Energy, FMC, Toyota, and Bayer. So, I've got to tell you, Al, this is something that you've talked about many, many times, and one of the questions that comes up is, does this not scream of backroom politics?
Well, it does and it doesn't. First of all, it's stupid. It is stupid because there are other ways of getting that information in which you don't go so high profile. Hearings. You get this information in hearings, you know, so you don't have to kind of label yourself as going to special interests. You can get there in a much smoother way. And so I don't know why he's doing it. Both parties like very much when they have bulldogs as chairman of that committee. Henry Waxman was a very effective bulldog for the Democrats when he chaired that committee. And Daryl Issa, I suspect, is going to drive the White House nuts.
Well, let me ask this question to Bob. Bob, is this the right approach for the Republicans to take? Is this a message that we want out there right away? I mean, it screams of retaliation. It screams of vendetta. One of the comments I've heard recently is, "This is the Republicans' way of getting back at Chairman Waxman for him being chairman of the Oversight and Investigations Committee."
Well, you have to remember, for the last 2 years, the situation of the Republicans in the House was something that former Speaker Thomas Reed had a great comment about. He said the responsibility of the minority is to keep quiet and get their paychecks. And that's all they have to do. That's the way he felt about it. That
Wow.
was 100 years ago. Now, in the last 2 years, the Republicans have basically been told, you know, we don't want your amendments. We don't want to listen to what you're saying. We're really interested in doing what we want to do. Issa is doing nothing more than, let's say, Henry Waxman did a few years ago when he was chairman of an investigative subcommittee, and he was investigating George Bush's administration and a number of things. So both parties tend to do these things. It's like the filibuster rule, you know, or it's like the party we were talking about here, the big party to raise money earlier. The fact of the matter is both parties have the same bad habits. Sometimes, and you just don't get past that. They just do. Now, is there reason to do some investigation? Yes. Let me give you an example. I saw something today in the new, in a political document that I was very surprised, a political newspaper, that said there was something like $1.8 billion of real estate in this, in the city of Washington and thereabouts, that the administration diverted this contracts. But the fact of the matter is, there's $1.8 billion of floor space that isn't being fully used. Now, $1.8 billion is our deficit problem. But it would be nice if we didn't have space that it wasn't being filled by people doing the job that needed to be done. If we have space that isn't being used.
Would that be more appropriate for the chairman of the Oversight and Investigative Committee instead of telling, you know, basically telegraphing his hand and saying, hey, by the way, tell me what you want to go after, whether it's,
yeah,
you know, reform to the Clean Water, Clean Air Acts, whether it's importation, trade issues.
That's my point about it being a silly thing to do. If you're going to, you don't get up and say, I am going to burn down that house. You simply walk by and surreptitiously light the curtains on fire and then look around and say, oh my, what happened here?
Ralph, let me ask you this question. Is from an international trade standpoint, I mean, the Obama administration has made several decisions on international trade that directly affect international relations and international affairs. Do you see China having a stand?
Sorry, you're breaking up. Can you repeat that? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you broke up.
Ralph, Chairman Issa came out for a lot of domestic issues. Do you see any international issues might want to tap on one that?
Okay, you're breaking up, and I think he's going to push a WikiLeaks investigation. He's going to have more transparency and accountability. He's going to push for the South Korean trade negotiations to take effect, also the agreement with Colombia and Panama. But what's going to be interesting to know is whether any of these companies that ICE has sent a letter to have access to the ICE re-election.
Okay.
Did everyone hear me?
Yeah, we did. We did. Thank you, Ralph. So here's a question here is, Al, a industry close to your heart, the railroad industry, I mean, whether it's air, whether it's transportation, whether it's the use of the Recovery Act, I mean, there's a ton of things that the railroad industry would love to have a Republican chair of this committee just tear into. Does the railroad folks or the industry folks who represent the industry, do you find that they absolutely are going to help you? Or do you just say, hey, look, we serve at the pleasure of you, Mr. Chairman?
My knowledge of the railroad industry suggests they will sign on big time. I think that's not smart because, again, there are other ways to get their point across without getting involved in this kind of thing. It doesn't seem smart to be so... It doesn't seem smart to be calling your shots, and so that your opposition doesn't have to prove that you are biased, that you are trying to throw rocks in the road and put sugar in the gas tank. You've just said that you're doing them, and so they've got you nailed right there. And going back to something you said earlier, and this goes on in this town, you said that ISA may be a payback for Waxman. Waxman, it was said, was a payback for Dan Burton, who chaired it before that.
Wow.
Burton was said to be a payback for Jack Brooks, a Democrat from Texas who chaired that committee. Mm-hmm. And you could probably follow this all the way back to 1832 or something like that.
What was the weather like back then, Al?
See that, the Hatfields and the McCoys.
It is a position that is architected to specifically be a place where you put a real mean partisan when the opposition
party holds the White House.
All right, so but does that not take away, or does that not eliminate the idea that we promote here at Backroom Politics, the idea of compromise, the idea of working to one another? Is this not just a shot across the bow saying, hey, it's business as usual?
Yes, it is business as usual. And I just named four people who, two of each party.
Who did it rather well.
Who did it rather well.
And we've got a phone call. We got a phone call from the 727 area code. Caller, you're on the air, Backroom Politics. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, can you just leave me on hold? I'm just listening.
Oh, okay. We can leave you on hold. Not a problem. Thanks for calling in. With that being said, though, you know, we're trying to promote, and arguably, Speaker Boehner has been trying to promote a more transparent, a more healthy environment for compromise, trying to get away from, as everybody calls it, politics as usual here inside the Beltway. But yet, Daryl Issa is allowed to go out and say, hey, let me go after the Obama administration. The paybacks and the vendettas arguably are going to happen. It's politics. That's just the nature of the beast. But,
yeah.
Bob, how do you see this being done differently, or is this the right approach if you're the Republicans?
Well, it is the traditional approach. There are always, when one party has one of the two houses and it's not the presidential party, they are always going to do, you know, quote, investigations. Sometimes they find some problems that need to be solved. Sometimes they're helpful. Sometimes they're just political witch hunts. You can't say going in which one you're dealing with, because no investigation ever starts without something to look at. Often it's just political payback.
Tip of the iceberg, basically.
But the reality is that it's not the best way to start off, unless you know there's a serious. Sometimes you know there are problems. Sometimes you know there are things that have been done that are inappropriate. Sometimes you're aware, just because you're up on Capitol Hill and you know bureaucrats talk to you, you know that there are some things going on that shouldn't be going on. Those are
serious. Things that could be done better,
yeah.
Or inefficiencies.
Yeah.
But,
you
not necessarily
know, no, it's just a question of, you know, what do you want to spend your time on? How do you want to position your party before the election? And it's very difficult for any party to get information or believe they have information that says, you know, some hanky panky's going on, and they want to look at it. And that is true of both parties. It always has been. A lot of it is just, you know, wasted effort. Some of it is useful.
Right. As much as I dislike Charlie Rangel, I'd look favorably at the Democratic Party for finally standing up, pulling him on the carpet, and reading him the riot act, putting him in his place. Is that something you see with the transfer of powers, that you said it takes an investigation, it takes something to trigger? Is this going to be
I certainly hope that the Ethics Committee and the independent ethics operation they have on the Hill, I certainly hope that they do not look upon this as a time for a witch hunt.
Yes.
I am really...
No, one has
to be concerned that if the Ethics Committee and the work that it does is ever seen to be tainted with over... political zealous efforts, I think we just say to the American public, the Congress is unable to police itself honorably. And I think that's a very important thing, that the Congress be able to take care of its own problems, do what it has to do, but it does not go out on witch hunts.
Al, have you seen anything like this before, where a chairman, before he's even sworn in, writing letters saying, hey, I'm going to be the chairman, give me the playbook?
No, there are very few members of Congress that are that stupid. I have seen members of Congress of both parties who behaved that way. They just didn't announce it. And I mentioned four of them, two of each party. So if you're going to have a committee like this, And you're going to have, from time to time, that committee in the hands of one party and the other party running the White House. You're likely to draw these kinds of highly partisan people. I'm reminded of something that Tom Foley once said about the ethics committees, that no one should ever be appointed to the ethics committee who wants to be on it.
Right.
In other words, the people that are
fine
in there to
if you volunteer, you're not right for
right
the job.
And there are people in the Congress who can do that job on a nonpartisan basis. The number of times John Dingell, as chairman of the Energy and Commerce Committee, has utterly roasted Democrats. He was a Democrat, is a Democrat, and he just roasted agencies under Democratic administrations because he found they were doing wrong. He would also do it under Republicans. No one could ever accuse him of doing it for partisan reasons. But
you brought up a good point, though, Al. Let me follow up on that. Is you're talking right now? I mean, by sending a letter to the American Petroleum Institute and the Petrochemical Association, I mean, that's gotta rub the chairman of Energy a little bit the wrong way.
Well,
you know, you're stepping on my turf, or am I reading too much into that?
No, but this is a committee that has overlapping jurisdictions with almost any committee, so that's going to happen. And no, those committees don't like it, but there's nothing they can do about it.
Well, we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna finish out. We're gonna talk about a topic that came out today. The Chicago Mafia continues to run rampant through Washington D.C. We've basically become East Chicago. There's some news coming out of Washington that we'll talk about when we come back in about 2 minutes. This is Backroom Politics live from Shelley's Backroom on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us. East Chicago, that the Chicago rule of law continues to migrate east from the Great Lakes to the Eastern Seaboard and inside the Beltway. The latest rumor is that Mr. Daley is going to be the new chief of staff at the White House. Now then, when I say Mr. Daley, which Mr. Daley? We're talking about William Daley, not Richard. We are talking about the former Commerce Secretary under Clinton. And we are talking about the older brother of
outgoing Mayor Richard Daley in Chicago. I got to tell you something. Is the question now to everybody, Chandler, does this strike you as being, hey, President Obama and the White House is just too dependent on Chicago, that it's a Chicago way and no way at all, or is this something that makes sense?
I so want to say yes, that it strikes me that way, but I remember when Bush came in, and I voted for Bush, big Bush fan, I remember a bunch of 10-gallon hats following behind him. So I think this happens in every administration. However, the Daley name scares the bejesus out of me.
Well, Bob, you were talking earlier that William Daley,
yeah,
this is former Secretary Daley, is somebody that you've had association with in the past. You find him very, he's a very honorable gentleman. I mean, in the times I've dealt with him, he's been very honorable. But he's a very sensible man, you think?
He's a very smart, very sensible guy, and I think he will probably, he'd be a good chief of staff. Remember, that's a political job, and he's a very good political guy.
The rest of the
Daley.
No, I would think he's much like
the. Oh, let me tell you something. He's the older brother of Richard Daley.
The mayor.
He knows exactly how the game is played.
But I would think that, you know, and remind yourself, the president can choose anybody he wants. It's his staff.
Right.
He has a right to choose who he wants. And if he's comfortable with his chief of staff, as he ought to be, it makes it, no matter what else you think, it's better the White House is run by somebody who the president has confidence in than somebody who he doesn't know.
Al, what do you think of Daley being named chief of staff, possibly? I mean, is this too much of a reliance on Chicago politics, or?
As it's already been said, you tend to draw from people you know. The worst example of that was Jimmy Carter, who brought all those people from state and didn't know what they were doing. You can't say that you're going to bring people in from Chicago who don't know how to run politics.
Exactly right.
You know, Brad, is there any pressure for Obama to bring him in?
No.
Ralph, let me ask you a question. As a chief of staff, as a former Secretary of Commerce, that's got to make you a little bit happy that you're going to have somebody on the Commerce side having the ear of the president. That's got to make you feel good from a trade standpoint. Am I wrong?
Absolutely. One of the biggest criticisms is that I didn't have anyone in the White House that connected with small business, or big business for that matter. So Daley can bring all of his contacts to that job and really push Obama's jobs agenda.
Okay, good point. So that remains to be seen. I guess that's a seat that we're going to be finding out here very quickly is what's going on. A lot of stuff coming up, but I do want to close out this one, our first show of 2011. We did not get to this segment last show we did live here back before the new year. I'm actually going to change. Originally, when we did the show, our last show of 2010, I wanted to ask everybody what you thought was the best political maneuver of 2010. That's a great subject, but that's in the past. We're in 2011 now. I'm going to ask this question for our last 10 minutes. What does everybody think could be, or what do you foresee being the biggest political achievement that could possibly come out of 2011? Al, I'm going to start with you. You can pass while you think about it.
Well, then the next person won't have any chance to think about it.
Okay, I'll go to Chandler. Chandler's always... Chandler?
I'm not ready.
Okay, then he's ready.
All right, Frank.
Frank is always ready.
Harumph. It's not harumph. I'm going to hurt you.
Harumph.
I think Obama's selection of Hillary Clinton was a slam dunk, being that the political ramifications for not having her in this position, I just think it was a stroke of genius on his part. I know he didn't make the decision, but whoever advised...
Why do you know that?
Well, the president, Obama just stood up and said, hey, Hillary Clinton would be great. Somebody got into his ear and said, hey, this is a great selection. Down the road, you can't go wrong by putting her in Secretary of State. Yes,
Bob, what do you think could be the biggest political achievement in 2011?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be the biggest achievement, but it's going to be one of the biggest problems
the debt ceiling has to be voted on.
Oh, yeah.
We are, we have to, we, if we don't expand the debt ceiling beyond the $14 trillion or something where we are, we've got to push it up. Otherwise, we'll be in a position of possibly defaulting. It would ripple through the entire universe, the entire world's economic system. A lot of the Tea Party people are saying, I'll vote for the debt ceiling increase if, and they have several ifs that probably cannot be met before they do the debt ceiling. I think that's going to be the biggest problem everybody has, because any responsible legislator knows that you, no matter what else you do, you can't have the government default.
Well, all right, Bob brings up a good point. I'll rephrase it to you. What do you think is going to be the biggest political issue in 2011 coming in?
Well,
that made you cringe even more.
Yeah, after I finally figure out an answer to the other question.
That's why we did it.
Which, incidentally, is I think if John Boehner can get a handle on his own caucus and can really make it work, that will be one of the great victories, and I'm not sure, but what will be a victory for everybody. If he can get the Republicans, he may be able to start working across the aisle, and we may move into good things. Now, what were your saying?
What do you think is going to be the biggest political issue in 2011, in your opinion?
Trying to cut the budget without having people in the streets.
Chandler?
I'm going to move us internationally, and I'm going to say Pakistan.
Wow.
But if we can get Pakistan somewhat under control and somewhat tamed, that's going to be our biggest problem. And if we can fix it or put a Band-Aid on it so it doesn't all go kaboom, I think that will be one of the biggest prompts of 2011.
Ralph, what do you think? What's the biggest political
issue? Well, I think the repeal of Obamacare. But if the Republicans can propose an alternative and the Democrats and Republicans can come to an agreement on a viable health care plan for the American people, that will be the greatest political issue.
The incoming Speaker's office has announced that next week the House will vote to repeal
Obamacare. Which they're not going to be able to do.
They will pass the House.
Yeah, but it will never go through the...
Oh, no.
Never
see daylight. It will be a major state.
But what Ralph said still stands as a huge achievement, if it can be done.
Right.
Last 4 minutes, because we're going to look in the crystal ball. I'm going to ask everybody. We know who the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee is going to be in 2012. President Obama. Who's a Republican? Bob, who's a Republican?
Can I choose my favorite, or do I have to pick the most obvious?
I want to pick both.
I think that Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana.
Mitch Daniels?
Yes.
Is that your favorite?
That's the guy I think would be, he would do the best job. I don't know that he can be elected.
Wow, thank God we record this. Who's the presumptive?
I would say probably it's the guy who probably has the most chance to win is Mr. Romney.
Al?
Romney.
Chandler?
I cannot vote for Romney. I'm sorry. Cannot do it.
Neither can I.
No candidate out there that fits my size.
I'll ride that fence, Chandler. Frank?
I'll have to stay with my party and go with Newt.
Okay. Ralph?
Romney.
Romney, I'll accept Romney. The correct answer is Romney. I would have also have accepted Mitch Daniels as well. He's a star that's coming up.
He's a really interesting
McDonald's
guy.
We would have accepted him, or we would have accepted Tim Pawlenty.
Yes.
Tim Pawlenty. Do not discount Tim Pawlenty out there. My heart is with Romney, though, unfortunately.
Can we have a president that sounds like a foreign food dish?
Oh, my God.
Maybe we can.
Which one is that?
Pawlenty.
Pawlenty.
Wow, bless you. Wow.
We've got one that sounds like something besides American.
Wow.
Obama.
Yeah.
So it works.
What happened to civil discourse?
We had Bush. We had Bush had mini double entendres.
Yeah.
And we digress for the last 2 minutes. For those of you out there at American University that have been listening, I want to tell you guys thank you. For those of you guys that were expecting to see our new executive producer and our new executive director at First Congress Society, Perry Blasting, Perry is off at a conference that is required for his degree. He will be back with us next week running the show. But I want to thank you guys at American University that have been very supportive of not only the First Congress Society, Al's and Bob's and my speeches out there. Ralph has been spoken out there before. American University has been great, so thank you. I also want to wish everybody a happy new year. The technical issues that we've got right now are going away. We finally got an installation date on the hard line, so we're going to come out. Also, stand by, everybody. The First Congress Society website will be up in 2 weeks. So keep your eyes on that. We'll have some major announcements coming out in the media about that. Frank, one last issue.
Thank you to Chandler and Rhea for appearing and in the future going to be talking on my show. Blog Talk Radio, Frank the Bodyguard, 6 to 7 p.m. on Saturdays from Bailey's in Arlington.
All right, well, if we're doing plugs, Chandler, you want to plug the show?
You know what? We're on hiatus right now.
You're on hiatus?
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Oh, no.
I'm appearing at CVS on
Friday. And I'm holding forth at Whole Foods.
Wow, okay. For everybody here at Shelly's Back Room, I want to thank you guys for listening. We will be back next Tuesday with Hardline and a much better connection. But stay with us. We appreciate your support. This
join
is
the 100.
Join the 100. Folks, tell your friends, tell your parents, tell your kids. This is Backroom Politics, live from Shelley's Back Room in the heart of our nation's capital. This is Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.
This is the place to be.
This
Shelley's
is the place to be.
Back Room.
Absolutely.